Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. I hope you're all doing well. The number to call in if you'd like to join the program is area code 267-521-0167. This is an open lines, anything goes show. And so if you'd like to call in, 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, you can call area code 855-346-3351. So let's see. I'm going to... that's odd. I'm going to be reading a little bit from a NAMI letter that went to... the Energy and Commerce Committee in reference to H.R. 3717 that I thank all of the people who send me information, and if the person who's listening to this, I don't know if you want me to say who sent it or not, but feel free to call in 267-521-0167 at any point. And it also is in relation to this NAMI letter, references a U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institute of Health initiative called the BRAIN Initiative, Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. Heavy, heady stuff here. So this is the NAMI responses to multiple responses, I guess. NAMI responses to the House Energy and Committee 21st Century Cures proposal. Oh, so this may not be H.R. 3717, but whatever the Cures proposal is. On behalf of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, I am pleased to offer our responses to the recent solicitation from the Energy and Commerce Committee on the bipartisan 21st Century Cures Initiative. I am pleased to offer our responses to the recent solicitation from the Energy and Commerce Committee on the bipartisan... Hey, anybody out there listening who knows what I'm talking about here, please call in 267-521-0167. Were you solicited by the Energy and Commerce Committee on the bipartisan 21st Century Cures Initiative to give some responses? I'm just curious here. Who is this to? I don't even know. I'm so confused. As you will see, I'm often talking about things that I don't know about because people pass information on, and it is troubling, though, that there would be a solicitation from the Energy and Commerce Committee to NAMI, and I wonder if any of the national organizations, perhaps they did, perhaps they also responded. Maybe I'm being too harsh here. Anyway, the response goes on to say, NAMI is the nation's largest grassroots advocacy organization representing persons living with serious mental illnesses and their families. Through approximately 1,000 affiliates in all 50 states, we support education, outreach, advocacy, and research on behalf of persons with serious mental illnesses, such as schizophrenia, manic depressive illness. Didn't they change that to bipolar? Major depression, severe anxiety disorders, and major mental illnesses affecting children. I thought it was 267-521-0167. If you want to talk, 267-521-0167. So this NAMI response to the House and Energy Committee 21st Century Cures proposal is, maybe that's what it's, maybe this BRAIN initiative has something to do, if I just Google it. Anybody who's listening want to jump in here and tell me what I'm doing wrong? or where to start, right? Where to start? So there is an article, another article in the Philly Inquirer that I would like to draw your attention to, because there are some people who are disputing with some things that I said, and there are some things I guess I should say that I wished that I said a lot of things. So I think that what the reporter wrote was generally fair to what I said, but it is not necessarily all that I said. But there are some people who are, of course, you know, who with my greatest condolences, who have lost their children or loved ones, because those people decided to take their lives, but they're using those individual situations as a banner in which all of us lose our civil, constitutional, and certainly human rights through H.R. 3717. And so on the Philly Inquirer, if you go over there, there's an article that the title is Bill Sparks Debate About Rights, Compulsion, and Mental Health. And so there's a little conversation that's brewing, and some of you may have done that already. But if you don't know about it, that's out there. And so this whole goal of reaching the mainstream media through the Talk with Kenny show is starting to happen. So that's two articles in the last 2 months that have reached out to me for comment. And so I think that that's part of what the goal is here, of how do we get our perspective into the news in a way that says what we're doing. Now, I still think that it probably is... Well, go read the article for yourself and come to your own conclusions of how it is. It was written by Aaron McCarthy, it's again published today, August 3rd. And so go check out, see what you think. That's that. Now when I Google, you know, the 21st Century Cures Initiative, I get about 123,000 results. I'm sure that's not totally legitimate. But there is a lot of information out here, and certainly NAMI's letter is one of those things that is there. Anyway, they just keep on going on. It's a lot about public-private partnership. So one of the things they ask is, what is the role of public and private funding in the research and development of cures and treatment? How should regulators evaluate benefit risk? How do you work? Oh, I guess maybe could this be the questions that were asked of NAMI in the solicitation from the Energy and Commerce Committee? What is the state of discovery of cures and treatment for your disease? Are there cures and treatment on the horizon? So they write, that's the question, right? They write, the reality is that current treatments available for serious mental illnesses such as schizophrenia and bipolar disorder are palliative interventions. Not curative. My God. At their most optimal and effective use, they are able to improve functioning and allow some to experience recovery and community integration. For major mental illnesses, we are still waiting for discrete novel interventions that can genuinely change the course of the illness and avoid lifelong disability and impairment. This includes development of a new third generation of antipsychotic medications to treat psychotic disorders. A new third generation. This is like, what is this? Off of the women's movement, they're going to have waves antipsychotic medication, neuroleptics. This is all from NAMI. You can get this online. Just Energy Century, 21st Century Cures, NAMI. So If you're out there, I would like to talk. Area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. Let's remind ourselves what Murphy, where is that long Murphy anosognosia comment here? I think it's this one.
Dr. Sherman, I'm just not clear. Are you a clinician that treats patients?
No, I'm a research psychologist.
Okay, thank you. You said SAMHSA does not support programs that are anti-treatment. Are you familiar with the Alternatives Conference?
I am.
Are you aware that Alternatives is short for Alternatives to Treatment?
It's my interpretation of Alternatives. It's not Alternatives to Treatment. It's alternatives available for people to make choices about how to best engineer their recovery.
Do you think everybody is capable of making that choice?
I think everybody is capable of understanding what's important to them.
Ms. Thompson referred to something called anosognosia. Do you know what that is?
I've heard it described, yeah.
Okay. I'm disappointed you don't know what it is. It's critically important. So I got to go into a little lesson here. If a person has a stroke, on the right side of their brain and the left side of their arm doesn't work, a characteristic of that is if you say to this person, try and move your left arm, and they don't, you say, I think you're having a stroke. You need to get to the hospital. The person may say, it's no big deal. I don't know what that's all about. That's anosognosia.
That's anosognosia. As an anosognosia, it is really so troublesome. And so what he goes on to say, though, in a hearing on H.R. 3717, what Murphy goes on to say and how he is allowed to get away with this kind of caricature of psychiatric, those things labeled, is unnerving. So it's going to start again just a second before it ends so that it brings you right in, so you show I'm not cutting anything here. I'm not making this up. I've cut them into small sound bites, and sometimes I will mix in and repeat things that were said, but I'm never cutting, information and moving words around out of order to make my point. I'm not doing that. This is really what Congressman Tim Murphy is saying.
If you're having a stroke, you need to get to the hospital. The person may say, it's no big deal. I don't know what that's all about. That's anosognosia. About 40 to 50% of people with severe mental illness, schizophrenia, if shown a videotape of them hallucinating, delusional, they don't know who they are, they think they're an angel Gabriel, Jesus, whatever else, and they say, do you think that's okay? They'll say, sounds okay to me, I don't understand the problem. What Ms. Thompson's referring to, for those people who are not capable of making decisions on their own, to have someone else assist them so that they have a right to get better, would you agree that such persons may need some assistance that they're not capable of making on their own?
Right? So, literally, angel of Gabriel, Jesus, whatever. Listen, this is what he's saying. This is in a United States hearing of the Congress on legislation that he himself has put forward, just the American government, right?
About 40 to 50% of people with severe mental illness, schizophrenia, if shown a videotape of them hallucinating, delusional, they don't know who they are, they think they're an angel Gabriel, Jesus, whatever else.
That's really what he's saying, right? But here's the problem, is that when who he's referring to, Ms. Zdanovic, she also uses this caricature of who it is that people with psychiatric, why we should have to do this to people. And I'm just trying to find that clip here. Okay, so here we go. This is still at the hearings for H.R. 3717.
Last question here I want to address it to Ms. Donowitz. Dr. Sherman called the journal editorial a gross mischaracterization, and it stands for leading an anti-psychiatry movement. Do you have any comments on that with regard to SAMHSA providing money or grants to groups that fight treatment or discourage?
Yes, and in fact, I have read many of the state applications for grants from SAMHSA, CMS, JEFF, and when you read those, you find very little reference to the most severely ill. Much of it is about, this is how we're going to get people out of state psychiatric hospitals. It's about how we're going to, if we just offer people, you know, what they want and make sure that we're really nice to them, that they're going to be just fine and it's going to settle their symptoms. But the question is, well, what if what the person wants is a semiotic, you know, machine gun to shoot you because they think that you are the devil?
Yeah.
Well, then what do you do?
Yeah.
Well, then you call the police and you get them into jail, and if there was ever a form of coercion, that is it.
Yeah.
They think that you are the devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the argument that's being made in Congress at a hearing on H.R. 3717. I mean, I think that the other thing is that even those who are supportive of us really have their line as to how far they will support us, too. And that little example of, you know, Murphy offering that, you know, the person thinks that they're the angel Gabriel or Jesus or whatever, quote, that's a quote. Shern's response to that is this.
I think in the way that you specifically have characterized the situation, people would meet the criteria for not being competent.
Okay.
And at that point, I think they could. Yeah, no.
Good. We're in agreement there. I want to make that.
So even, you know, even people who think that we should have alternatives and we should have choices and things like that, you know, that they have a line too, because if you think you're the angel Gabriel or Jesus, you know, or you're the devil and you're going to, you know, if somebody thinks you think people are the devil and you want to shoot them, then that's the line. But the fact that this is what's being used, this caricature, this rare situation of things that happen to some people, no doubt. But even if, and this is so unpopular, but if these experiences that are constantly being dragged out and hailed out as, you know, angel of Gabriel, Jesus, the devil, to psychiatry can fix religious experiences? Like, this is the other side. And so this, of course, is very problematic. It's a very difficult discussion to have because people go to the far extremes, as always. But I don't think that we can discount that spiritual experiences throughout history have occurred. They probably will not stop occurring. And if somebody, is having this experience, that then gets labeled out. But the way that they're presenting it is still caricaturist, and it's set up to cause fear in the average person who does not know the first thing about psychiatry or anything. And it also conflates issues of where people talk about struggling with their personal demons, and that people have demons that they need to struggle with. And there are things like that in our vernacular that have over time been used. And so I think, again, the way that they are mushing us together, immediately creating this conditioning, associating the need for associating the need every time they talk about taking away the civil liberties of Americans based on this fraud of psychiatry, they immediately put the drumbeat of supposed violence. Because how else would Americans let their rights be taken away from them unless it was based out of total fear? The article from NAMI, this response to the Energy and Commerce Committee on the Cures Initiative, is that it says, after this idea of new third-generation antipsychotic medications, It says, in NAMI's view, it is critical for us to move beyond the current universe of palliative treatments for serious mental illness. The sad fact is that even with optimal care, some children and adults living with serious mental illness will not be able to achieve recovery as defined as permanent remission. I wonder how permanent remission, like, so at the end of your life, that maybe they can say that you recovered if, what the hell? So people living with serious mental illness and families desperately need rapid, effective treatments that target the core pathophysiology of serious mental illnesses and the tools for early detection. Rapidly need rapid, effective treatments. They need this. This doesn't exist. The treatments that target the core pathophysiology of serious mental illnesses don't exist, and tools for early detection don't exist because none of it exists. It's and not to say that extreme states don't exist or emotional crises or needs don't exist, but I bet if you remove things like trauma, abuse, physical, sexual, psychological, emotional abuse, and economics, you know, take capitalism out of the picture and see what happens then. Go ahead. You can start the calls coming in or as you like, 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. What happens if you take the profit out of psychiatry? What happens tomorrow if all of a sudden, if you take profit out of psychiatry? That's what I want to know. Anybody want to call in and talk to me, 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. I think what happens is immediately you see an end to the need for psychiatry and things such as this. All right, I'm going to, here, let me see, where was I? I'm just really beside myself. So an estimated, this NAMI article, you know, with all their 1,000 affiliates right at the beginning, an estimated 11.5 million American adults live with mental illness that is often seriously disabling, such as schizophrenia, bipolar and disorder, and major depression. Based on estimates for 2010, mental illness accounted for 21.3% of all years lived with disability in the United States. Among the top 20 causes of years lived with disability, 5 were mental illnesses. 8.3% depressive, major depressive disorder, 5.1 anxiety disorder, 2.2 schizophrenia, 1.6 bipolar, and 1.5 dysthymia. Suicide is the 10th leading cause. Isn't this great for a Sunday night? 10th leading cause of death in the U.S., accounting for the loss of more than 38,000 American lives each year, more than double the number of lives lost to homicide. The social and economic costs associated with these illnesses are tremendous. A cautious estimate places the direct and indirect financial costs associated with mental illness in the U.S. at well over $300 billion annually. Why does Energy and Commerce care about this? Why is Energy and Commerce deciding psychiatric things? Let's take a step back and just even ask that question. And why are they soliciting NAMI for responses to their questions? What are we doing here? I don't know. 267-521-0167. Leave me here talking to myself all night. If you need a toll-free line, 855-346-3351. Palliative treatments for serious mental illness. Anybody hear that? Is this a new language that NAMI is putting forth? Third generation, the search for third generation antipsychotics and an end to palliative treatment for mental illness. It says NAMI also supports efforts at NIMH to translate basic research findings on brain function into more person-centered and multifaceted diagnoses and treatments for mental disorders. The research domain criteria project is showing enormous promise toward efforts to build a classification system based more on underlying biological and basic behavioral mechanisms than symptoms of RDOC should begin to give us the precision currently lacking with traditional diagnostic approaches to mental disorders. What family member wrote this? What a freaking scam. What family member is sitting around saying, if only we had a better classification system based on more underlying biological and basic behavioral mechanisms. Is any family member saying this? There's no family member saying this. Family members are saying, like, there's something wrong with my, you know what I mean? Like, family members are saying whatever, but they're certainly not using this language. This is not their language. This is written by the interest of you know, who knows which exactly, but some bizarre combination, or not so bizarre, of pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry and, you know, a few. The average family member is walking around saying, we need a better classification system. Like, who talks like that outside of some, either academic or, research psychiatrist or something? NAMI article continues, or responds to the Commerce and Energy Committee, or Energy and Commerce Committee, sorry. Moreover, these costs are not only financial, but also human in terms of loss of productivity, lives lost to suicide, and broken families. Investment in mental illness research and services are, in NAMI's view, the highest priority for our nation. Congress and the Energy and Commerce Committee as you consider 21st century cures. So then I guess the next question is, what is the state of discovery of cures and treatment for your disease? Did I do that one already? It all seems the same to me. Yeah, the palliative treatment. If you'd like to talk to me, I see a bunch of you there. If you'd like to talk to me, 267-521-0167, or if you're hanging online, if you press 1 or star 1, it should be able to flag my attention. So the next question or another question is, what programs or policies have you utilized to support and foster research, such as patient registries, public-private partnerships, and venture philanthropy? And the response is, NAMI is disappointed by the relative absence of innovative public-private partnerships. Right, so here we are just immediately again at money. Area code 613, your line is open.
Hi, how are you, Lauren? It's Sue.
Hey, Sue, how are you?
I feel a little bit better. I still got that rash. Okay, that's traveling like a wildfire. Anyhow, I'm okay. I just wanted to say something. I don't know why people are not starting to be their own, advocates to go online, to look up their medications, to look up, the various views on psychiatry. We have to be our own, our advocates now. We have to, because a lot of psychiatrists lie to us. And anyhow, the family doctors right away, Susie, you feel depressed, you look sad, I want to give you a pill right away. We have to inform ourselves. We have to be our own advocates. The doctors want to give us pills. Psychiatrists want to drug us up, put us in the hospital, and give us a diagnosis. I always go online with every medication, let's say for a rash or headache or something.
Right, absolutely. People are just, I think people need to be as informed as possible and to read as many things as they can, without a doubt. Yeah, and I don't think that people are encouraged to do that at all. So that's a really good point.
And I think it has to be done because there are too many people being murdered, being maimed, and having serious side effects and memory problems from electroshock, from the pills and everything else. We have to do that. You know, okay, like it's not up to us to ask someone. We have to go online and really, you know, okay, like investigate this for ourselves.
Absolutely, and that beyond just what the pharmaceutical company or the FDA says, but really finding personal stories of people who have had, you know, who are open about their experiences with these things. Because sometimes you'll find out from a whole different perspective when you actually talk to somebody rather than just read the warnings. But even just reading the warnings, you can see there's a long list of bodily damage and potential death on every single one of these psychiatric drugs, every single one of them. So it really, even just reading it. But I think, you know, sometimes what happens is that they're so downplayed by the prescriber that, you know, people don't, you know, because if I'm not going to go to you for a prescription, what else am I going to go to you for? Because we don't have any kind of relationship, right? I mean, you know, the only thing that you can really give me is a drug, any doctor. Because you're not going to, very often, I mean, there are some, of course, obviously, who sit and spend tons of time, and I'm not saying that those people don't exist. But overall, as a field, doctors, you go to for medicine.
And another point I want to make is that a lot of vulnerable people out there are being controlled by their parents. If they're, let's say, schizophrenic, the parents will go, you know, to the schizophrenic society. My son, my daughter is sick. Don't tell me otherwise. I'm protecting this kid because I've gone to a meeting at the Royal Auto, Friends of Schizophrenics. Someone said, shut up, Sue Clark. I said, I'm not going to shut up. I said, I was labeled schizophrenic, and it's all a crock. And they said, go. I sat for the whole meeting, and I got up. I said, that's not true. So anyhow, what's happening?
Wait a second. You went to a Sue, back up. You went to a meeting of the what? And they said what?
I went to a meeting at the Royal Ottawa Hospital called the Friends of Schizophrenics, Parents of Schizophrenics. Okay, so-called schizophrenics. You know,
the Friends of Schizophrenics. Okay.
Yeah, and so I, of course, had that label initially, and I got up and I said, okay, that there was some doctor, a mucky-wucky doctor from some, you know, whatever, and a drug company guy with the latest pills. I stood up, I said, I'm Sue Clark, and my first, you know, like the diagnosis was schizophrenia. And I said, and there's no such thing. I said, and there's no such thing, because it is a crock. It's a crock. And they said, shut up, Sue Clark, shut up, shut up. I said, I'm not going to shut up. I said, I'm here to tell Dr. Mucky-Wucky about his disorder and tell Dr. Mucky-Wucky about his pills from the company. I stood up and I got, you know, basically the whole group turned on me. And I stood up there and I said, I'm going to tell you the truth about all this crock of diagnosis, eh?
That really is pretty awful. I mean, on so many levels, but that they would even treat you in that way. The Friends of Schizophrenics.
Yeah, it's the families and friends of the schizophrenics. They say, my son Don has been sick for 6 years, and his medication doesn't work, doctor. I want to know what to do. They'll say, well, here we have this new pill, and I was there, and I said, forget the pills, it's a crock. And they'd say, shut up, Sue Clark. And I have a tough skin, and I stayed, and I kept arguing with them. I took a stance, and I said my piece.
Sue, let me ask you something. I'm reading this article from NAMI, and they're talking about two things that I'm very concerned about. One, well, I mean, they're talking about a ton of things, but two of the phrases, new phrases that I haven't heard before, maybe you've heard. One is a search for third-generation antipsychotics.
I never heard that.
And the other is palliative care, that all you get with current treatment is palliative care.
I've heard of palliative care for people who are dying. I had a friend up at the Elizabeth Breer Center dying, and that's where they put people who are dying, like a like your last stage housing.
Right. That's what I thought. And I'm looking up just in on a online definition. Relieving pain or alleviating a problem without dealing with the underlying cause. And then the example is short-term palliative measures have been taken. And then as a noun, a palliative remedy medicine, which is what they would be talking about. The synonyms are painkiller, analgesic, sedative, tranquilizer, anodyne, calmative, opiate, rhombite.
Well, I've heard of palliative care, but I haven't heard I haven't heard those other terms.
I'm fascinated that this is like part of the way NAMI, because if a palliative remedy or medicine includes sedatives, tranquilizers, calmatives, bromide, you know what I mean? This is part of, and it is usually used in terms of dying, right? Like this is last, end stage cancer, terminal illnesses to relieve severe pain, right?
Yes.
And make things, so that NAMI is calling this palliative, that's the language that they're using. And why, I don't know if you know any more about the American government as a Canadian than I do, which I don't obviously know enough. But why is the Energy and Commerce Committee soliciting NAMI to respond to a series of questions about the 21st Century Cures proposal? This could have been also a decade ago, for all I know. No, June 16th, 2014. I'm just looking at the end of it. Respectfully submitted, Mary Jill Birdie, JD, Executive Director, National Alliance on Mental Illness, June 16th, 2014. So there's a ton of really concerning...
I think it's a bid for more funding from NAMI, from the American government, to say anything, to get their hands on these dollars. That's what I assume, because, NAMI, from what I understand, has lots of funding because they have every program with mental illness from A to Z and more, okay? So I think it's a bid for more funding, probably from the feds and their state funding, Here I'd say provincial, but of course in the states, it's called the states, and we have provinces, eh?
It definitely looks like it's funding related, and some of the questions were specific about private-public partnerships and how you learn about new things and what is the role of public-private funding in research development and how can Congress help? So, but the fact that I want to know, was Mind Freedom International solicited by the Energy and Commerce Committee on the bipartisan 21st Century Cures Initiative? Was NARPA? Was any of the organizations that are focused on survivor rights solicited by the Energy and Commerce Committee?
I'll tell you, of course, as well as you do, that me and you are part of MFI. Now, with them, Mind Freedom International does not accept any government funding at all. They only get the funding, not funding, but their dues from people like you and me, the average Joe.
No funding. No, of course not.
No funding,
not.
Okay, I'll tell you that Mind Freedom...
Or religions or industries.
Yeah, so in other words, Mind Freedom International has no government funding at all. It's all by the members giving the $20 or the $40 per year, okay? That's it.
Right.
There's no funding from anybody, nobody.
I understand
except
that. Yeah, I understand that. It's important for
okay.
people to understand that. But there was no, I mean, this was a questionnaire that was sent to NAMI
oh.
from the federal government.
Okay.
Asking them a series of questions. And I want to know why they haven't solicited from advocacy or activism organizations
mm-hmm.
or if they have. That's my question. Did they?
Yeah.
Because maybe
well,
they
did. I'll tell you, no, for sure that, you know, the NFI did not. And I know why they don't. Because with funding will always come strings attached. And, okay, for Mind Freedom, okay, International does not want any strings attached because, as we know, that most governments are corrupt. They are, MFI are, you know, getting their money from the members for their membership fee. That's it.
Right.
I've been a
right.
member of...
I know, that,
of,
but that's not what I'm asking. That's not... I understand and I agree with you completely.
You understand where I'm coming from, eh? Okay.
But I'm just wanting to know why... Well, forget the second half of the question. Why is the Energy and Commerce Committee soliciting information from NAMI as as the largest grassroots organization? Why is that how it is they are responding to this solicitation about the future of care in America when and where other organizations ask these questions, and who else did the Energy and Commerce Committee ask these questions of?
I don't really know, Lauren, because I don't know anything about that, you know, Energy Commission. I'm in Canada. But the thing is, it sounds very suspicious to me. That's my answer, okay?
Well, yes. Yes. I would say that.
Because I can't answer very well. I don't know NAMI very well, and I don't know that board, energy, whatever it's called. So I can't give you a good answer because I don't know that those groups very much.
Right.
Sorry, I couldn't help you. I mean,
no, that's okay. But it is suspicious, which is partially why I'm asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I have the answer either. But I think that there must be somebody out there who does. And Sue, if you like, please stay on the line. Area code 609.
Sure.
Your line is open. 609. Hi. If you have your phone on mute, if you could take it off mute. Your line is open, area code 609. Maybe there is a little glitch there. Let me see if I try again.
Mm-hmm.
Live radio. Hi, area code 609, your line is open.
Oh, yeah. Were you just... I had to step out for a sec. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on. Hi, how you doing, Jason?
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
From New Jersey. I don't know, I'm thinking about a lot of things, but I wanted to know if you or any of the callers have read Howard Dully's book or heard him interviewed or know who Howard Dully is.
No.
No, would you?
He was lobotomized as a child by Walter Freeman personally, and he survived. As he grew up, you know, I think he was 12 or 13, and I don't know when the book came out. I have read
it. Did he
read
My Lobotomy?
Yeah, it's My Lobotomy.
Yeah.
That's a good book if anyone's interested, and you can listen to an interview with him. I think it's from NPR. I'm not sure. Maybe a couple of years ago it came out. It's a really good survivor account. I mean, he doesn't consider himself a psychiatric survivor, I don't think, but you know, he survived it, and he held jobs, and I think he became an alcoholic, but you know, he managed to to eventually see his records and everything, and to look at it's kind of an examination of the dynamics that were going on with his family and why he was treated that way and things like that. So he had some much later on, years and years later, had some kind of reconciliation and was able to, he helped write the book. I don't know if he actually wrote it. I think he did some of the writing, but he worked closely with someone to put together this book. It's really, really good.
That's a great suggestion. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that could be a topic for the show, because I know they still do these surgeries in some places. They call it stereotactic surgery, or they've got some other fancy names for it now. But I don't know. That was just one point. I don't know about. I was listening last night to Julie's. That was a good show last night.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just listening, really.
It's good to hear you, and I think if people want to check out a good book that really has a lot of evidence of survival in it, My Lobotomy, and that people can and they are still doing it, and now they just call it neurosurgery for psychiatric disorders, or the intentional brain damage from, or the known brain damage that's caused by the psychiatric drugs. And so that we can survive, and it's not forever. And the way NAMI's talking about this palliative care, like end-of-life care, and it's like...
Yeah, I need some palliative care right now for all the problems I'm having due to the treatments I've had. You know, I need some help, you know. It's like... Jesus, it's just what they, these NAMI and Representative Murphy, it's really bad news. They're just using these, violent situations where people become violent as reasons to promote this, these strengthening of laws, and it's really frightening for, I think, for a lot of people. I wish we had a stronger voice or something, or more power in some way that we could reach more people, just a broader audience. I think we are with the internet, but
I think we are, and we have to continue and really get to a mainstream level here, because HR37 Murphy, the whole bunch of them, I mean, it's because anybody who supports who doesn't support H.R. 3717 but supports 4574, the Barber Bill, that calls for early intervention and treatment, is no friend either. You know what I mean? Because eventually it all just leads to forced...
We could do away with early intervention. You know, so many people would be saved just from a lifetime of drug-induced misery. If we could just prevent, we need a prevention campaign for early intervention, because it's a dangerous idea. It's a really dangerous idea, and all the kids who are being terrorized, really.
It really is. I mean, even on 770 ABC this morning, I heard Bregan referenced, because they were, and also another organization that I'm not going to choose to talk about, but who is working toward the same end of exposing what's happening to children with psychiatry. But Bregan was referenced as, like, this is that we need to stop putting children in danger. and that, you know, they're talking about the hundreds of thousands of children, or millions maybe even, I've so bad with numbers, but many, many, many children who are being drugged and, you know, whose lives are just from, then they were specifically saying, like babies, like two-year-olds, three-year-olds.
Well, I've met some people over at the drop-in, and one of them was an intern who's studying at a university here in New Jersey, a local university, and she was still on drugs, and she'd been put on drugs from an early age and could not get off of them. I mean, wanted to badly, but could not get off of them, and studying to become a psychologist, and as an intern, we get regularly a rotation of interns from Rowan University, and I meet them and talk about them and try to introduce them to some of these ideas, and this person was really interested. And she was still, you know, I think in her early 20s, still on the drugs to put on, had been put on them at a young age, I think at eight years old. And, you know, was still on some low doses of benzos and a couple other things. Could not get off them, even with some support. Really couldn't useful people to help her to manage, you know, what she was going through to get off these things. So it really is a widespread, cultural thing that's happening. It's affecting a lot of people and their families. You know, it doesn't just affect that person. If that person's on these drugs and having emotional problems due to the drugs, that, you know, it affects so many other people. So the public really, I think, ought to be pretty concerned about this issue, you know. And I'm glad that people like Peter Bragg and other people are able to, you know, he's had interviews in mainstream media and things like that. I've come across some of those, but I wish there were more people interested in, because I think a lot of the medical community is complicit in a lot of these, you know, that involve psychiatric things. You know, they play them down. I've experienced that personally, gone to see neurologists and other people in medicine, and they, you know, discount what you're saying, just like the psychiatrist would. So it's pretty dangerous and scary for people. After they've been damaged iatrogenically, they can't get help. You know, they can't get necessary safe help and support.
And in general terms, yeah. And I think that one of the things that Dee Voice showed was that the thing that gets people out of that trap and that vicious circle that just goes spiral down, the downward, vicious downward spiral. Mm-hmm. We should have Nine Inch Nails playing in the background or something. what gets them out of it is meeting somebody else and hearing their story who got out of it or who's working to get out of it. I think that's one of the reasons why we have to repeatedly tell our stories
I agree with that. It's true. Like trauma survivors, you know, it's important that they be able to tell their story to the safe people who will listen and validate what they're saying. And to do it again and again, because that storytelling is a good healing activity. You know, positive step for people, I think, to take. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
that's why your show is so good and I think it's helping a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and it's working. It's reaching the mainstream media. I don't know if you were on before, but I said that there was an article in the Philly Inquirer that I got quoted in.
Yeah.
And so that's like the second.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I said to her more than I ordinarily would have said, because she was trying to balance the story with, but I'm not sure that I'm not sure that she did, but and I think that she did good, but there was a lot more that I said that I felt more important than the things that she thought were important. But maybe it's opening up a dialogue, you know what I mean? Like for mm-hmm. future kinds of things. And so the last lines of the article is, which I think she really did right by our movement and our, you know, the whole point is on some levels, it says, for whatever benefits the bill might yield, Tenney argues that the involuntary treatment provisions would be harmful. Quote, this is going to extend the amount of lives psychiatry destroys, Tenney said. People's rights are trampled on. And then, quote, talk to the parents whose children are in the coffin, Murphy said. Ask them if their children have been stripped of their rights. And so I'm going to call her tomorrow and contact her again, the reporter Erin McCarthy, who was just wonderful. I mean, I spent a really long time on the phone with her, and it was a really good conversation, but I said a lot of very personal things and a lot about my story, which I'm, you know, whatever, is you know, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, constructed however people want to construct it. And so I was nervous about it, but I'm going to call her to tell her that, like, I would love to answer Murphy's question, but, you know, he blocked me from his Facebook page, and mm-hmm. and his press secretary still hasn't called me back, and so, you know, I'd like to respond, but so maybe I'll respond through, maybe there could be some kind of dialogue.
I thought Murphy was open to dialogue, you know, he said that. I'd like the release the beast. That sounds good to me. Release the beast and some collages.
Where is that? Here, hold on. Let me play this for anybody who doesn't know. This is from the hearing.
Do you think in the alternative conference, which spends about $600,000 a year of taxpayers' money, do you think we should be paying for conferences that have things called Unleash the Beast, Primal Movement Workshop, How to Make Collages, Dancing, Interpretive Yoga, or How to Stop Taking Medication? Do you think taxpayers should pay for that?
I think it's very important that we have an open...
I'm asking, do you think taxpayers should pay for those items? When we get so short on funds, do you think we should be paying for that, for people who have severe mental illness?
I think that it's very important that we have an open forum to discuss the very...
I appreciate that. I didn't ask you about an open forum. So I'm going to take that as a yes, and you're afraid to say yes. Do you think in the alternatives conference...
Oh, sorry. I mean, yeah. Like, I saw a funny... well, it wasn't really funny because it saddens the whole point. And they just are so vicious about... needing to move this kind of agenda, that they're totally doing it at the expense of human nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Murphy always seems really concerned, you know, that you've got to be a professional. It's got to be a psychiatrist. You need professional psychiatric, you know, evaluation and treatment, or else you're going to strike out and endanger people. It's discouraging to know that the people, you know, think that way, and it's very limited. It's so limited.
And it's such scary times.
Yeah.
It just is really, seriously, scary times. And the level of, stature that organizations like NAMI get because of their pharmaceutical back funding and the way that they provide faces for the government's desire to take away our civil liberties, I'm sure that if people weren't, sharing their story of how they've lost a loved one and whatever, you know, experiences that has created for them, they are the sellers of it, and they don't even realize it half the time. I know it. I know it. So many of these people who wind up getting involved with NAMI who just are looking for some kind of support and told that they are good and genuine.
Yeah.
Wind up getting caught up with them. And like I was saying before, like, you know, we need a classification system. Blah, blah, blah. Like, what distressed family member is talking about the need for a better classification system? Like...
I've been to some of the local meetings around here just to see what's up. 'Cause I think at one time my parents were involved a little bit with NAMI. You know, we're encouraged to go, you know, for their sake, on my behalf or whatever, but they no longer go. But I have been back to see what they're like, since I don't remember. I was told that I didn't want to participate in NAMI, so I must have been, you know, intuitively somehow, you know, not okay with NAMI. So it probably made me uncomfortable. And you know, going back to be there, I think for some people who really don't know what they're getting into or are new to the system, you know, it seems supportive and it seems legitimate and everything. But yeah, there is so much money involved, drug funding, it's hard to get people to see what really is going on.
Oh, and the money, and the money. And, of course, you know, energy and commerce is who's doing this, so there's the money. You know, like, and all of the questions that they had to NAMI, like, why was NAMI solicited? And that they would use that as the phrase, the offer our responses to the recent solicitation from the Energy and Commerce Committee. I just think that there is something, like, not good going on there. But the questions were all around, you know, how can we coordinate and accelerate basic research for diseases we know relatively little about? How can we work to translate advances in science? How do you coordinate research and outreach with patients? How do you learn about new treatments and cures? Where are the money ones? What is the role of public-private funding in the research and development of cures? How can Congress help?
Yeah. Well, I guess this idea of this third-generation antipsychotic thing, then it just makes perfect sense, you know?
Yeah.
That they would be searching for a new line of designer drugs or whatever they are, you know?
I'd really like one of the third-wave feminists to come on and tell me what they think about the third generation antipsychotic drugs. This is going to attack women in such severe ways and men and all people, but we really need to be looking out for just every single person. Area code 202, Jason, please stay in line. Area code 202, your line is open.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was a little late. I just came on. I heard you say something about the third generation of drugs. There's not that much difference between them.
Yeah.
I mean, really, seriously, not much difference. I remember...
Maybe they just add new diseases. That might be the only... New diseases that the drugs cause, like diabetes now.
Right. Well, some of them, what happens is that they did a study. I can't remember. I think it was a case study or something. They did a study on those, and there's not that much difference between them. I know I used to be thinking, well, they have these newer drugs, and they would have lesser side effects.
Yeah.
But it seems as though a lot of times what they do is they combinate them or they make them depot-like, you know, like Risperdal and Constant. You know, one is you take the pills, and the other one is you take the shots. But it doesn't seem to be too much difference. I mean, they seem like they're based on the same principle and true to their people that are very strong promoters of forced treatment. I mean, the they say that the chemical companies have stopped doing research. So I think that says that they realize what they have is as good as it gets. I still contend that maybe 30 years from now, they're going to compare some of these chemicals to the 19th and 18th century bloodletting. So I don't see much. Have you seen it? But I haven't seen much difference in them. I mean, there might be some small thing. They used to say, for example, that Abilify would have less chance of gaining weight or have that empty, what they call it, that where you feel like you're hungry all the time. But then that turned out not to be true. I mean, all you got to do is go on the disclaimers that they advertise on TV, you know. They have a nice little rosy picture of somebody having some emotional distress, or I don't even think it's emotional stress. I mean, when people talk about being shy or not work performance, but then when they outline at the tail end of the commercial all the things that, you know, you should, you know, tell your doctor if you have high blood pressure or you have diabetes, this happens and that happens. I mean, it seems like, you know, with half the people recovering without any intervention at all, it just seems like you would only want to use this stuff for a very short period of time, if at all.
If at all.
Yeah.
If at all.
I mean, I remember reading part of that in Pritiker's book. They were saying that half the people, if they have nothing going on, they get along. Now, I know that Tori and them people talk about is that little small subset. It's not saying that some of these chemicals can't give people some amount of relief while they work on other things, but, you know, they only study these things for, 6-8 weeks at a time, and we're all in a gigantic study of what's happening to people for 20 to 30 years, and we see what's happening with that is that people are losing their life, they're getting diabetes, you know, people like me are getting arthritis or other things at a very early age. If you take women, I remember reading about 10 years ago, and I became concerned, they said women with depression, their bone density, they had a bone density of a 65-year-old. And, you know, come to find out, the reason why is because, not because of depression, but because of the chemicals that people are taking are damaging their bones. So we really got to pay careful attention to this, because no one's doing any study to talk about the vitamin deficiencies that some of these chemicals take away from your body. I mean, it's like I'm a big proponent now of magnesium. Magnesium saved my life, and it is one of the things that a lot of these drugs rob you of your magnesium. 80% of all Americans are magnesium deficient, and many of my peers would probably do good to have their doctor check them for vitamin deficiencies and to supplement with magnesium. That helps depression. And some of those SRIs, some of them take away your magnesium levels. The medication themselves make you sick.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you that.
No, they really don't. It really is something else. So I'm just looking on April 30th, 2014. The Energy and Commerce Committee released a press release called "A Path to the 21st Century Cures," and You know, House and Energy Commerce Committee Chairman Fred Upton today announced the launch of 21st Century Cures. He's a Republican from Michigan, by the way. A new initiative that aims to accelerate the pace of cures and medical breakthroughs in the United States. And so apparently this was the initiative that NAMI was somehow solicited to respond to and what I was reading from. And Energy and Commerce is also who the where the Murphy bill is originating from, H.R. 3717. So it's hard to say it's not all intentional. looking at all we get now is palliative care. Do you feel like you're getting palliative care? And with the understanding that the noun palliative includes tranquilizers, sedatives, analgesics, painkillers, pain reliever, anodyne, comative, opiate, or bromide.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about that is that a lot of these things, you know, people stop talking about, except for maybe Stanley talking about a cure, because we know that there's no real illness, but people would do better to concentrate on their overall health and improving their environment and economic status, and a lot of stuff would just go away. You know, that's not saying that people don't have real emotional stress. You know, that there's not such a thing as people having a reaction years later from real traumatic events. But you know, for some of these things, for them to say that these are real, people that say these are real medical conditions, brain conditions, I never understood how could a social worker who in public mental health, most of the people, the frontline people, they have no training in chemistry or biology. You know, and you got most of the people that people in public mental health come in contact with, other than the people who dispense the medications, they don't have any training whatsoever in biology or chemistry or anything like that. So, you know, neither is there any test. So, you know, people, you know, I started to look at common sense things. If the frontline people, if you claim that this is something that can be taken care of by electronic intervention or by chemical intervention, why is it that the people that come in contact with most people don't have any of that kind of training? And that the people who do, that their sole goal is to, they don't ship the paper, dispensing of chemicals that cause people to really, you know, have real, we know diabetes is really real. We know that obesity is a real issue, that arthritis and heart disease, these are real illnesses that you can test.
That are really caused by these psychiatric drugs very often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you go for pain for those, you're ignored. So. And then they tell you it's all in your head. Give you more psychiatric drugs. So, apparently, they were still seeking feedback, the Energy and Commerce Committee, on this 21st Century Cures thing. I'm going to try to figure out a little bit more and where and see if perhaps, since the 21st century isn't over yet, they'll take some more feedback.
Well, look at all this, you know, all this money that's going to be spent.
It's just been one of those days. But I do think it's really a concern that this is, you know, that this is the search for, you know, third generation antipsychotics and an end to palliative care, and that, you know, how they can help is by the federal government giving more money, allowing more research. The very last thing, under how can Congress help, the very last thing is NAMI also supports the Youth Mental Health Research Act, H.R. 4170, which we authored by Chaka Fada of Pennsylvania. I don't know if I've said your name right. By authorizing a youth mental health research network at the NIH, HR 4170 would advance mental illness research and ensure better focus on early detection, greater coordination of multi-site clinical. HR 4170, I think we're going to have to stop that one too. This will promote and greater replication and adherence to the guidelines, protocols, and practices developed and validated in important studies on early intervention in psychosis, such as the North American Prodrome Longitudinal Study, which is deeply human right, whatever, and the recovery after an initial schizophrenia episode, the RAISE study. Both of these, NAMI urges the committee to support H.R. 4170. June 16th, 2014.
Yeah. Well, what do they just want to identify people early?
they really. I mean, people don't. People think, you know, oh, you're being so overdramatic or whatever. This is exactly how it happens. This is exactly by the time the average person is going to be affected by this stuff, everything is going to be locked in place, and it's just going to be it's just going to be too late. Because they're already killing us. they're already killing us.
Yeah, I think people don't realize it because even some of the doctors are waking up. I don't understand how the people can sleep at night. I guess if you repeat a lie long enough, and you hear enough people saying the lie, that you'll believe.
Wait a second. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes, if you repeat a lie long enough, I'll wait a second. I'm terribly sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
You lie long enough, and then you have enough other people that people consider to be learned to repeat it. Then you know that people will believe it, even if there's no evidence to the fact. You know, that's the big thing about it. So they're going to spend more money to identify people, to give them those old drugs and maybe mix it up with a few new ones. And those chemicals are going to make the people not be able to do well in school. Because we know what these chemicals do. You know, they restrain people. They sedate you. And you know, some people will be, you know, having I don't like these word normal, some experiences that teenagers have, and also some people will be going through some spiritual experiences.
Yeah,
and they're going to be locked in. You know, I see the pattern that happens, especially with African American youth. And they get locked in, and they say, well, we want to get some help for your kid. Then the parents have to apply for SSI or Medicaid so that the providers can pay for the intervention that the providers have. Then people get used to getting that little bit of money, although it's not anything. I think that people that get disabilities get a lot of money. SSI, you get something, and I don't have the exact figure, a little bit over $700, a little bit under $700. And that's the kind of existence that people cannot, no one can live on that kind of existence. So you kind of have a yellow brick road leading to poverty for people that won't be able to have the energy to do schoolwork. And therefore, you have people in their 30s and 40s that have never worked in their life.
Yep. Right. And I think that, you know, when you look at, I'm just looking at what this H.R. 4170 that NAMI is supporting at the end of their letter to Congress, But it apparently has a 1% chance of being enacted, but it still exists, and it's technically called the Youth Mental Health Research Act, and it authorizes the director of the National Institutes of Health to, one, provide for the establishment of a youth mental health research network for the conduct or support of youth mental health research and intervention services. Research and intervention, what do you think they're getting their research from the intervention? And that that it should be in collaboration with national research institutes and centers that conduct youth mental health research, and it should award cooperative agreements, grants, contracts to governments and private nonprofit entities for conducting research to meet unmet needs for youth mental health research. For youth mental health research, unmet needs for youth mental health research, or training for researchers in youth mental health research techniques. Providing youth mental health intervention services, which of course is what they'll research, and collaborating with NIMH to build on scientific findings and clinical techniques of earlier program studies and demonstration projects. Up to 70 grants awarded to support 5 years, subject to extension. As long as you focus primarily on early detection and intervention of severe mental illness in young people, conduct or coordinate multi-site clinical trials or therapies or approaches for the prevention, diagnosis, or treatment of early severe mental illness.
Clinical trials on young people?
Yeah, disseminate scientific findings, adhere to... So I wonder how this works with Justina's law around young people, but that's limited to young people, I mean, which is important, but young people who are in foster care or who are people who are wards of the state. But this is allowing for this to happen. Yeah, it's only got a 1% chance of being enacted according to govtrack.us, but it was just introduced March 6th and referred to committee. And so for next year, we're going to need to, this was the last thing that NAMI supported. NAMI urges the committee to support H.R. 4170, the, Energy and Commerce Committee, because they know so much about, psychiatry. What a freaking fraud.
Did you see anything in there? Is there one word that you didn't say? Is there anything about prevention?
Well, yeah, they're prevention. I mean, because what they're promoting in the paragraph above is the prodromal, studies where they're giving kids drugs preventatively, quote unquote preventatively.
I'm not talking about that. So that's what they're calling prevention.
I don't know what they're calling prevention, but they're not. They studied the North American Prodrome Longitudinal Study and other studies focused on prediction and prevention of psychosis, and has launched early psychosis prediction and prevention initiative, and that this shows promise. NAMI is disappointed by the relative absence of innovative public-private partnerships and venture philanthropy focused on serious mental illness. While there is significant investment of private philanthropy on mental illness and suicide prevention research, these efforts tend to lack focus and coordination. So those are the two places.
They lack the forcing people to take the chemicals that make them suicidal in the first place.
Right. No, there's nothing about that. No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's nothing about that in there.
No, not in NAMI's letter. And in the thing about the Children's Mental Health Research Act, prevention is, yes. The limits are that So it's to support 5 years subject to an extension. It requires the director to ensure that appropriate number of awards go to entitled entities that agree to, one, focus primarily on early detection and intervention of severe mental illness in young people, two, conduct or coordinate multi-site clinical trials of therapies for or approaches to the prevention, diagnosis, or treatment of early severe illness. Oh, wait, maybe we can get them to prevent prevent diagnosis and treatment. So that would disseminate scientific findings, adhere to the guidelines, protocols, and practices of the North American... this is a big problem. Part of the limits is that whoever's getting these grants have to adhere to the guidelines, protocols, and practices used in the North American Prodrome Longitudinal Study and the Recovery After an Initial Schizophrenia Episode Initiative, the RAISE Initiative. And it requires the director to establish a data coordinating center, require the center to provide regular reports on research conducted, and incorporate information reported in the director of NIH's biennial reports. You know, nowhere in here does it say anything about informed even just in consent. It doesn't say anything about informed consent anywhere in this bill. And, of course, part of the reason it says nothing about informed consent is because a child is not allowed to give informed consent. And a parent can't consent for a child. All a child can do is assent or decline, and if they decline, they are usually overridden. And so every American child needs to watch the F out. So disturbing. Oh, Yvonne, I hope we didn't... I just see that. Yvonne, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry, it blanked out, and I just realized that because I was in a different screen.
What I was saying was, and if you get injured, if you're a child and you get injured, you can't see your doctor, can you?
Yeah, I think that's a question, right? Yeah, I think that...
Can't see your parents, I mean, because what they're going to say is, this is what the whole world says is that you need. So, you know... Tiny little brains, livers, and kidneys assaulted by these chemicals that we know that do real damage to adults. And, so you have 4, 5, and 6-year-olds taking things that we know that damage real-life people. Is that saying that parenting is hard work? And there are people that really are having some serious issues in parenting. Deserve to have the help that they need and not to have their children used as a peach tree dish. What would happen if some of these parents that had children that some of them may be in true emotional distress, if they got the kind of wraparound help that they needed versus saying, here, take this pill for your child. I don't know if you talked about this because you've been on there. Have you seen this new website, the National Alliance for the Seriously Mentally Ill?
No.
It looks like your fellow upstate. It sounds like DJ Jaffe, but that's what it says. And I was wondering if it's really NAMI doing it or somebody trying to make like it's
NAMI. What's the address? You sure it's not a joke? What's the address?
It's the National Alliance Against Serious Mental Illness. I'm going to try to find it in Tennessee. I'm on an iPad today. But, yeah, it's the National Alliance on Serious Mental Illness.
All I'm getting is NAMI stuff. So, it just means that I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it says something like, treatment before something bad happens or something. Yeah.
There's a couple of ones that just came out. That I was looking at the other day that were pretty much horrifying, too. Like that kind
they
of mess.
They have a Facebook page. It looks slick and well-financed.
National.
I'm trying to get hook it up now.
association against serious mental illness.
Go on. I'll try to find it and send it to you. I'll let you know during the broadcast if I get
it.
Yeah, thanks. Computer. Sometimes tablets don't do very well to find things.
Yeah, as if the National Alliance on Mental Illness wasn't enough, or whatever they call themselves these days, on mental illness.
National Alliance on Serious Mental Illness.
Yeah, if you can get a web address, that would be great, because when I Googled that, all I got was NAMI. Who has a long-standing collaboration with NIMH that they are proud of.
MentalIllnessFunky.org. Okay.
What's it called? MentalIllnessPolicy.org?
I guess this is their parent. It's MentalIllnessPolicy.org.
Oh, yeah, that's Jaffe. That's his organization. He changed it? That's interesting. Mental I can't believe that this is what we're talking about. I'm not going to do this right now. I need to be more prepared. But, yeah, it looks like there's a whole lot of information up there, but it really is just the gateway to the loss of our civil liberties. And they're proud of it. They say it, and they mock anybody who suggests that people should be concerned about the potential loss of civil liberties, and these are dangerous. These are dangerous people, striking at the foundation of what America is supposed to be about.
That's what that is. Okay.
that's what that is.
Illness, including adequate capacity, and civil commitment law.
I guess the Donowitz will think that I'm gonna try to, you know, but this is the devil. This is the problem. And they couldn't, and they dare to suggest that they are promoting unbiased information. Like, this is unbiased.
That's what they say. Jaffe is supposed to be the leading authority on unbiased information.
Oh, yeah. I guess you can see...
Mommy might have had them take that down because...
Oh, yeah, like, look at this one. National legal issues and cases. HIPAA handcuffs parents. that's about as unbiased as you get, I guess. And they have a whole, you know, links to... their own HR 3717 page and why that this should be getting passed. I mean, people in this break, people really need to be reaching out to their local congresspeople and preparing their senators for whatever comes down the pike. Something will come.
That's what it is, treatment before tragedy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw it. And I looked all over the place, and I did a Who Is website search and everything, and I can't figure out the first thing about who's behind that. But, yeah, if you go to Who Is, I think it was Arizona that it was coming out of, but that could just be the company that they're paying to hide where they're coming from.
Great Falls, Virginia.
What's that?
I thought it was Great Falls, Virginia, treatment before tragedy. I went on this thing is still up because I went on what's it called, Google to see the place where the address is 93 old something treatment before tragedy.
Wow, do you know that they have the myths page? If you scroll down, maybe it's on every page, but it's definitely on the HR 3717 page. And so there's a little thing on mentalillnesspolicy.org that says myths, opposition, and impediments to reform. And so there's apparently a page on psychiatry versus anti-psychiatry, myths about consumers, myths about medicines. Have you ever seen any of this?
Yeah, but that's on tech, isn't it?
Maybe it's pulled from there. Let me just see. I mean, it's listed on, yeah. So some of it is pulled directly. It just links to other crap. But myths about consumers, and so then it's the Kendra's Law, involuntary outpatient torture in New York.
Oh, they were saying that Andrew, that was what it, they were saying that Andrew was saying that they interviewed or something while he's in prison. He said that, he wished that they had their law in force.
Yeah, he wished that they even, he went 32 different times to try to get help and was refused every single time. And I don't know him, and I've not ever communicated with him, but he would not have qualified for the law. He was seeking out help. He was not refusing psychiatry. He was being rejected by the system. And they twist that around every which way. And so, yeah, when he's been quoted in different article papers, he's said things that others, I remember there being whole conversations around, well, what's somebody who's in prison supposed to say?
When you're locked up, who went and talked to him in the first place? But I guess it's because it's almost time for him to get out now. We only got a few more years. Isn't that why the extension was directly related to him?
I do not know. The loophole that just went in through that passed the Senate and the Assembly and I believe was signed was around another person who committed heinous murders that they then are going to have to have everybody who's leaving prison or jail or incarceration, they said, screened for Kendra's Law prior to it. So I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like, you're in school and somebody in the class spills some milk and the teacher says, well, we can't serve milk anymore to everybody.
Right.
So that's... I was referring to was the treatment before tragedy, and that's www.treatmentbeforetragedy.org. That is, I think that has the myth that you were talking about it, about broken system. Oh, they got slick. They got some stories from 60 Minutes.
It's highly high profile. I tried to
put a lot of money on that. Their logo is TB40. But even on the page they've got, boy, I wish we had. They are using it to the height. They got an online magazine. They got their Twitter.
And you can't figure out who they are. It's impossible to figure out who they are. In other words, when you do a who is, who owns it, you can't find out. It's blocked. You're prevented from knowing who owns the website.
Yeah.
So I think these remain issues. Jason, you still there?
And in the house 7, George Kelly, Lake Falls, Virginia.
What do you think about this, Jason? Anything? Any ideas?
Not really.
Okay.
Is this another bunch of propaganda?
Yeah, that's what it, I mean, that, I'm just kind of laughing at most of it because it really is just more of the same. I don't have too much else to say, really.
Okay, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but yeah. I mean, I just wanted to check because sometimes the computer, you know, the studio fades out, and I couldn't tell. But I do think that we're in big trouble, and that these are super scary times, and we need to really educate people about about this. Like Sue was saying at the beginning of the program, reaching out to knowing individually, taking responsibility to know what drugs you're on and what the potential effects are and all of that. And the repercussions, and that this is just marching. I mean, we're just being marched away. And this is so slick, this treatment before tragedy, Iman. It's so slick.
We had to follow that money there. Let's see, from Base 3 Studio.
Yeah, but when you donate,
I saw this 9907 Georgetown Pike. I live in Washington, D.C. I really don't drive, but if anybody else wants to take a trip out to 9907 Georgetown Pike, I'm willing to go with them.
Oh, that's a great idea, and see who's behind the whole thing.
It's probably one of those. It might be just a place where they got a mailbox or whatever. But it looks like from the picture, if you go to Google. It looks like one of those little places, in a lot of communities you have places where they have a lot of more offices that are set up, and they're like on the first floor, trying to Google it now. I want to put it up on my Facebook page, because I know we got some people that live out there in Northern Virginia. Great Falls, that's where they have like... those nice big homes.
Yeah.
I mean, nice big, you know, these are million-dollar houses. They don't have public transportation going out there, but it's a beautiful place.
And apparently they've already trended on Twitter. And so it's... it really is, you know, on their Facebook page, if you go to their About, you can't get to their About. Maybe you need to like them to be able to get around their other things, or maybe my computer's just jamming. But it's,
we know that TAC is funded by Stanley, because they put that up right up front. They don't make any mention any words about that.
Right.
That's where their money comes from. Comes from Stanley.
Right. So many things. So, do you have any updates?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm going to Geneva at the end of the week. To the Committee on to Eliminate Racial Discrimination.
That's wonderful.
I've been working with some other people, Tina Mackwick and Cindy Fisher, and some of the other people on the committee are wording some statements before the committee about banning forced psychiatry, and we were brainstorming. We were thinking that it might be a good idea if the U.S. government held tribunals for people who have been hurt by psychiatry. I mean, some of the people you had on your show, but I think it would be a good idea, because I think that the American public doesn't really know the real story. Or they hear these people that have initials behind their names, and they always trot them out when there's some tragedy. And, of course, most of these people who are doing this are already in treatment, number one. And the most of the massacres, which are a small amount of people, they have gun violence, are done by white males. No one talks about the tens of thousands of people that are shot in this country that they're not associated with any kind of mental health diagnosis. But that's what I'm going to be doing, and I'm hoping to, but I might not be on a day or so, but I'm hoping that I get set up with Skype. I have Skype, so maybe I'll call in while I'm in Geneva.
Well, that's very exciting, and the world is lucky to have you there.
Yeah. Well, there's been some things to kind of push the shy away. One of the committees is talking about some other things, but I feel as though they can handle these other things a little bit more, and we need to emphasize what's happening as far as the misuse of psychiatry and how that is being used to oppress all people, but especially people who are already disenfranchised, already profiled. And when something happens, then it seems as though you can use mental illness as a reason why the person who kills you or does harm to you can't be brought to justice. Now, that's why I was saying you can't sue your doctor. If the police do something to you and they find out you have a mental illness, then that seems to be a justification for whatever is going to be going on. So I want to stay true to what is there, because I think a lot of people are not paying attention to it, and the world should be paying attention to it, because, you know, and I think the World Health Organization did some reports a few years back. I remember front page stories on the Washington Post, and they were saying that, you know, people in the third world, they were recovering from schizophrenia. They didn't even have the rate as high as we have in the Western industrialized world. You know, and even then, that was before I had even heard of Whitaker's book. I was saying, well, what is it that they have that we don't have? I mean, they...
what don't they have that we do have?
Well, you know, they have, you know, that's what happens. They have access to medications and chemicals and stuff. I remember about 4 or 5 years ago being in Bolivia, and they have... Cocaine is legal. And you would think, well, if it's legal, then they would have a very, they would have all kinds of problems with the drug addiction. But they said, well, yes, they do, but it's the medications that get problems with. People were getting addicted to the medications.
Right.
So, no, we're influencing other places around the world where maybe they wouldn't have had some of these emotional issues, but, you know, if we give them chemicals through UNESCO or whoever else, then all of a sudden they're going to have outbreak too.
Such major issues.
Engineered, but you said we have to keep an eye on it, and maybe we can't have a slick website like the Treatment Before Tragedy, but when I come back, I want to use my blog or have some other people that might want to help with it so that we can start listing these legislations, because they're like a bad tenant. You think you knock one down and they just keep coming back.
Yeah, multiplying. Right.
Yeah, well, they know that the you know, who prints money? Who prints money?
That's the question.
So they keep going to them, you know, as if we didn't have enough. I mean, you know, if we had enough issues on poverty, is a great stressor.
It certainly is.
Lack of support for young families is a great stressor.
Certainly is. And when you look at things like the repercussions of institutional and structural racism and classism and, gendered thinking and discrimination based on sexuality or sexual identity or anything, and religious belief. It's so monstrous in the long-term impacts of how it literally just destroys people, and we're just growing it. All we're doing is growing, and all Murphy wants to and his like are just interested in growing it. And the fact that this is happening through the Energy and Commerce Committee should have everybody concerned. This isn't happening through the Health Committee.
They're not talking about what things they can do to help people. That's the thing, and maybe we should be talking about more of that, because they put so much energy on detection, so much energy on, like, it's a plague out here, but they don't say what they can do for people. I mean, you know, I remember being, when I was hospitalized, and many people tell me this same thing. I said, well, what could have helped you, kept you from being in the hospital? Well, I said, I needed support. You know, I needed to be able to to talk to somebody 2-3 o'clock in the middle of the night, you know. I mean, if they took 1% of the money that was spent on all this detection and help with warm lines and people doing community outreach and helping people, you know, maybe doing some kind of focusing on their overall health, you know, we wouldn't have a lot of these issues. We supported parents in a difficult situation. You know, maybe you wouldn't have to, you know, damage people. I just keep thinking about you, ladies. The first time I heard you on the radio, you talked about this little girl. She was 4 or 5 years old, and she had died.
Rebecca Riley, yeah.
Yeah, and all the medications they were pumping into her young little body. And you think of a 4-year-old, you know, a little child, anybody that's out there that got kids or grandkids. You know, they weigh, you know, you're talking about someone weighs less than 50 pounds. You know, their lungs and liver and stuff is, you know, pink and beautiful. But we know that these chemicals, they damage the liver, they damage the kidney. And yet we don't have anything to show to the parents to say there's no blood test. There's no X-ray. I mean, they have some little spots on a scan, but I don't hear anybody telling me, well, you know, I'm going for my annual scan. You know, like we go for breast cancer. Have you heard anyone say that they were going to get their annual scan to check their cortisone level or check, you know, if they're bipolar or schizophrenia, if it's increased or abated? Did anybody tell you that? It's all subjective. It's all has somebody else to speak against.
Yeah, and some of those things, I think cortisol can actually be tested, but that's not what's being implicated in general. That's where they're trying to move it to, and they're also trying to move it to infectious disease of things that they can test. But that just opens up a whole new can of worms for anything in terms of...
That's what they want it to be, like a plague, you know?
Right.
I think anybody that comes to Washington, D.C., that's interesting, this, or even there's other places around the country, or you can go online. You should really look at the Holocaust and how that really began. You know, that started out with people with mental health issues and developmental issues. The twin studies, I just saw Netflix movie about the twin study that they had, no one knew what this Dr. Mengele was doing. Even when one of the women tried to find out what Mengele had given her sister, because she had kidney failure, you know. And I just think about some of the things, some of the eugenics type stuff, just that's wrapped up in this mental health seems to be the same type of thing. And I don't understand why people don't see it.
It's really scary. It's scary, and nobody wants to really deal with it. And I think that's the biggest problem, is that there's this real thing out there that if you wind up talking about it, if you push too hard, that this is history is repeating on us, that all of a sudden you're not credible or irrational or paranoid or conspiracy theorist or whatever the hell you want to call it, and you're discounted. And so people
if you don't have any evidence of something, if you ask somebody, it's like saying, prove to me. Not saying that people don't have emotional distress, but a lot of this is caused by trauma. Some of it's caused by people having drug-induced psychosis. But, it's not saying that people aren't having it.
Well, I don't know what drug-induced psychosis is, but I do think that there's certainly once you've added a drug to your system, whether it be legal or illegal, prescribed or not, you've changed the chemical makeup of what's going on. And that people are informed about what, when they voluntarily take these drugs, about the dangers and what it's like coming off, and what I just want to remind people what Jason was saying earlier about the woman who wasn't able to come off of the drugs because now she's been on them so long that she doesn't know that she can't get off them, and that every time that people talk about the dangers of coming off the drugs and coming off quickly, and that this is part of the what's not happening in informed consent. This is part of what people are not being informed prior to they ever putting the drug in their mouth for the first time anyway. So what is voluntary, or how much voluntary is voluntary, if A, you're not really being given all of the information, and B, at any given point, your voluntariness, if your voluntariness ends, they can then force you. So you're being able to say yes means nothing when you can't say no. And I think that was also a point that Larry Drain was making with Community Hope Works, and I read a couple more things on his blog, and I really think people should go check that out.
Yeah, it really should. But, there are some doctors now, I have a good doctor who is, not call his name, head of psychiatry at a major university here. But there are some doctors now that are still letting up. They're not so much increasing medication. They're backing away from people being on this regimen of medication. I remember taking stuff in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the night, and that was really my job, was to take my medication. And it was not that the medication, I think, cured me. It just kind of restrained me from thinking about a lot of hurtful things, and really talking about it and getting support from other people was really what helped me. I think so many people cannot be engaged because they are just so medicated, or they're being told by, I consider it laziness, by some practitioners who don't even want to practice doing therapy anymore. All they do is just write prescriptions. And that's why it amazes me that a psychologist, a former psychologist, even though he hasn't practiced in 18 years, has his name attached to this bill that is so onerous. I used to think that the profession of psychology, because by and large they didn't write prescriptions and they worked with people.
Right. But I bet you a part in the next step is that psychologists will have prescribing permissions. Either way, we've got 45 seconds left. I just want to thank everybody for calling in tonight, Sue, Jason, Yvonne, Keep speaking out. I look forward to hearing more. Jason, I hope you'll tell us about more good books to read. Check out My Lobotomy, the newest suggestion. If you have a tip for a show or would like to be a guest, area code 718-273-8708 to call the Talk with Tenny tip line. Area code 718-273-8708. I want to thank you all for speaking out, and I'm going to ask you to keep on speaking out. Until next time, talk to you soon. Good night, everyone. Thank you.